And otherwise, is there anybody else out there that wishes to address the council?
Mayor Rupp.
Hi, this is Jennifer Gardner.
Dan Dunaway.
Diane Folsom.
Okay.
Todd Frickley.
So I had two female voices there right after.
There was Gayla Hossett and Jennifer Gardner.
Okay, Gayla and Jennifer. Okay, so I would urge you, can please everyone mute your mic so that whoever's speaking to us, it doesn't echo and it can be clear. So the first one, Norm, did you want to address the council at the workshop now, or were you going to wait for a bit of discussion at the meeting?
Whichever you think is more appropriate, Mayor Ruby.
This would be fine if you want to talk now. And if we, if we've got six people here, if we go longer, we just go longer. It's important to hear people.
Okay, sure. I'd be happy to share a few comments right now. And thanks, Mayor Ruby, and thanks, council members, for the opportunity to speak again to this issue this evening. Obviously something that unfortunately we're probably all thinking we're spending way too much time on, and who would have ever guessed a couple months ago that we'd even be having these conversations, but the reality is that we are. I think it was about 6 weeks ago now that the Vista Bay Partnership, which consists of Vista Bay Native Association, the organization I'm with, BBDC, Vista Bay Native Corporation, UTTB, Vista Bay Area Housing Corporation, Vista Bay Area Health Corporation, after a considerable work, put together a statement looking for state support for what we described as kind of a three-legged stool. And the three legs to that stool were real quarantining, real testing, and the third leg being real enforcement. Weeks went by, obviously, with no response. We've submitted several letters and, again, no direct communication. We have reached out, and we have had individual and group meetings with different members of the governor's office and with top medical personnel around the state. And the reality of Mandate 17, small vessel mandate, as we now know it, coming out was very real. And we also recognized that, you know, this was probably a big statewide plan. And, you know, again, one size does not fit all, and Bristol Bay has its very unique applications. So working in the background, a number of us came up with a proposed Bristol Bay amendment. Early on, the governor's office actually asked us to do this because they realized that Bristol Bay was different and special. You know, we don't have 58-foot limit seniors with cabins and staterooms for isolation. And so they were looking for that input. So we did that, and a lot of work went into it. A lot of medical professional advice was taken into account. And so quarantine standards were stipulated and testing standards were stipulated that I think meet the light of day when it comes to science and medical support. Okay, do we have a phone to mute? And we've passed that proposed Bristol Bay Amendment along to you folks, and so hopefully you've all had a chance to look at it. And at the end of the day, hopefully you folks in the City Council will support our efforts to get that implemented at the statewide level. The fundamental component to what we're working on is that we're advocates for prevention and protection. I think we all know that once we're confronted with this issue in mass out here, we all recognize and know what the limitations are of our medical capacities in the region. And, you know, we can spend all this time working on all these different resolutions and try to implement them and all the nuances that come along with it. But God, if we can just try to get in front of this thing and eliminate these issues and complications before they get here, I just think the reality of success is so much higher. And again, I heard some questions earlier about protocols. Who does the testing? Where would the testing be done? Are they PCR? Is it IgG? Is it IgM? Again, I would ask and recommend that you look at the Bristol Bay Amendment that we're proposing because we've laid all of that out. You know, and the same thing with quarantines. Quarantines need to be real. Some of this 14-day work-in-place quarantining that's been out there to this point is quite frankly, just a real joke. Again, you know, I'm pleased to see that the city, and Todd, a lot of credit to Todd, he's working 27 hours a day, and the state even in the last 24 hours seems to be moving a little closer to what I think are some of the plans that actually have some community protections built into them. But at the end of the day, we still have an awful lot of work to do, and it's going to take all of us working together to do it. And I think at the end of the day, there's going to be compromises. You know, we can't pick and choose what works for us for the next person. We're all going to take a little bit of a haircut in this thing, and it's not going to be easy. But when the alternative, you know, it scared, the crap out of me last night when I saw a possible requisition purchase order being put together by public health, you know, and the very last item was 50 body bags. Now, I know that that's real, and that's actually planning for a very real reality here. But God darn it, if we can't get in front of this thing, and we can get in front of it with doing the right thing, that's what we need to be doing. And I want to close my comments with, I want to share with you, this isn't BS, but these are real statistics, and it's a fishery that indirectly I'm also involved in, and that's the at-sea pollock processors. Their next fishery starts in the middle of May, and the vast majority of the at-sea pollock processors have gotten together and put together a mandatory quarantine and testing plan. And that plan went into implementation on Tuesday of this week. And in the very first 2 days of the plan being put into place, 207 employees were tested. And these were all taken, the medical testing was done at the hotels in Seattle, and the actual laboratory work was done by the University of Washington. Of those 207 employees that were tested, seven people tested positive. All seven people were asymptomatic. In other words, they didn't show the symptoms. They would have passed any of these screenings that we're talking about here. They didn't have fevers, but all of them were positive, live viral carriers. You know, you run the simple math there, and that's 3%. You know, I extrapolate that to 5,000 people that are going to be traveling and working in Dillingham alone, and that works out to be 150 people if those same statistics bear out. Folks, that's real. And that's the reality of what we potentially have staring us in the face if we don't do something about it. And so, again, I would continue to advocate, I would urge you to advocate for out-of-region quarantining and testing as bare minimums for allowing this thing to proceed. So with that, I'm certainly open to taking some questions if I can answer them. Thanks, Mayor Ruby.
Thank you, Norm.
Thank you,
Norm. I appreciate your patience. Your talk was clear in the beginning, then it got garbled, and then it cleared up again at the end. So I will ask if anybody has any questions for Norm, especially if you couldn't hear some of the pieces. No, I don't think there's any questions, Norm. I think we sent that the proposed amendment around, and I'll make sure that we send it around again as soon as we get done with this meeting. And then we have the partner's original proposal even in the packet tonight, so I'll make sure that gets around again. And then also, I think Norm and Todd talked earlier, and some of the things that were in that amendment were in Todd's proposed rules. And the rules certainly can be, you know, adjusted to reflect some of that, too. So thank you, Norm.
Yeah, Mayor, can I make one last comment?
Sure, go ahead.
There, and I think Todd touched upon this a little bit. There's late breaking news today from some state officials that they're going to be releasing and have released a draft suggested change to the mandates. I would advise everybody to take a look at those. Again, I see it as a significant step in the right direction. I believe that medical professionals, even at the state level, are pushing for these. It doesn't get us as far as I think we need to get, but I commend the city for trying to do what's right. And, you know, sometimes this will probably mean that, you know, and I heard Todd even say this to me yesterday, you know, it might be looking the state of Alaska in the face and saying, you know what, you say we can't, but we need to do what's right to protect the citizens of our communities. And I hope you do that, and I applaud you for having a city manager that says that. Thank you.
Thank you, Norm. Jeannie Timmerman, did you address the council?
Yes. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Mayor Ruby. I have a couple points, and one of them I had already emailed to Todd, but he didn't answer me. But I was concerned about the logistics of testing, like Greg, because there's, you know, this essential, this little map here, I mean, it's very discriminatory. There's boats stored up in Lekinegik, past the city line, and then, of course, my son's boats in Gusty's yards. Do they going to go down there and test? I mean, I think that just is an open question. So I just would put that out there about the logistics of that, because if you say they have to have a test, then they'd have to go someplace to get a test. So then they'd have to go someplace to – it just doesn't even make sense. The other problem I have is that, I mean, I think it's kind of borderline offensive, Todd, when you say that you know, residents might require special. I don't see it as a special privilege, and we are, you know, we're the ones that support this infrastructure, like the harbor and stuff. So to say that a boat can't come in and that person, like, get a bathroom pass or something to go home and right back to their boat, I mean, to me, that strikes of a civil liberties issue, too. So just to ask people to think about that. The other thing is about the virus itself. I'm a nurse, so I'm, of course, really interested in the virus. I've done lots of research on the virus. And I think it's important to note, I mean, I know that there's body bags and I know that people are dying, but for the most part, people get well from this. So that's a very good, that's a good thing to remember. The other thing about the fisheries related district, you know, so if you go, you know, if you go park in Squaw Creek, then you're not in that district. I mean, I think it's just too mind-boggling, the use of the district. I think that really discriminates. Also, that just so discriminates against drifters, so that the set netters can go and hobnob and all, and then they can just put their skiff on the beach. So it's a big discrimination factor, I think. So, and also, I just have a big problem with. These 32-foot boats, a lot of local boats don't, you know, they don't have bathrooms on them. So this is a huge problem. This is going to create a whole nother sanitation problem when you get these guys on the boat, plus some, not to mention some mental health problems. So those are my comments.
Okay, thank you, Jean. Gayla
Hossett? Thank you, Mayor Ruby. Gayla Hossett, I'm a resident here in Dillingham. I'm also the second chief of Children Tribal Council. And our tribe has been working weeks, just like your council has, on COVID issues every single day. Today, we are on calls with the White House, with tribal nations across the United States. We're on the two-week calls to BIA statewide with all the tribes in Alaska. All of Alaska residents are concerned right now with COVID, just like we are. And for us to open our doors up to allow out-of-state residents to come here and to fish our waters and to come into our towns and to have all of these, they are the ones with the special privileges, Todd. As we're all hunkered down in our homes, quarantined, we're home right now fighting to protect all of us and all of those who are coming. Because the hospital itself does not have the capacity to handle the influx of the people that are coming this year. And you could see on Facebook the attitudes of these outsiders and how they're saying we're coming anyways. We don't care what you guys say. All for money. Money that's going to be the cost of us, all of us locals who are here. We can solve this problem by having no access, no harbor access. They can't use the boat harbor. There's so many things that we can do as a city. We pay property taxes here, and Jeannie's right. We pay taxes, and then we're going to have to go launch at Dragnet down there at the end of Wood River. That's filled with mud all the time, and the tides, we're not going to be able to, it's just harder to launch it at Wood River. Subsistence activities are so important to all of us this year, more so than ever, and then so we need to address if we're going to be able to access boat launching at Kinakinak Beach that happens every summer, and also the subsistence sites along Kinakinak Beach. So that needs to be addressed. I have a whole list of concerns that I see that needs to be in the ordinance or in the commercial fishing 2020 memorandum. Negative tests should be have negative tests before arrival. Airplanes should be checked for permits and make sure that they have their permits when they land on the ground, and make sure that they have a copy of their negative COVID papers. Have a log. Where are they going to be quarantined? When does their quarantine date end? And make this list public so that we could help the enforcers, that if we see any of these people not in the fishing district where they're supposed to be at. I guess the non-residents are required to stay in the fishing districts. And if you guys name Gusty Walls area there, that if people come there to go there, that once they're there until the season is over, according to what I understand, what I just listened to. Where are people going to get their tests? Boat harbor access to the bathhouse for showers, toilet facilities. Where are they getting water? How are they going to wash their clothes? Sanity right now and making sure that things are sterile and washed and clean is a major concern. And how are these people going to even get water? What is the city's plan when people start getting sick? Our ambulances, our EMTs, etc. We don't have much of those services either, and I think that we don't have enough EMT volunteer squad. Todd mentioned that if people start getting sick, you have an identified place where people are going to go. Where is that, and who is going to take care of them? Does the city have a copy of all of the vessels and processors' plans? Because all of these people cannot answer the question of what is the plan when people start getting sick. We can have all the tests that we need to test people, but what's going to happen when people start getting sick? Nobody is addressing that issue on a lot of these calls, and that needs to be number one priority. A mandatory mask requirement needs to be in all public places, not just the fishing district. AC is the number one highly contaminated place right now where the virus is going to be spread. We need to have mask requirements when we go into the grocery stores and the post office. I'm so happy that L&M requires masks for going into the store. There should be a fine if people aren't wearing masks. And these fines, I also wanted to address that the fines that we have on this ordinance that is not going to be enforceable is $1,000. That's nothing to these people who are coming here to make $100,000+ every year. That's nothing. But maybe we could fine people for not wearing masks in town. Bristol Bay residents to be able to come to Dillingham to shop for supplies for subsistence and fishing and in order for them to live. When this first happened, we thought everybody was going to be hunkered down. But our sister villages need to come to Dillingham for their supplies, and they should be able to come and access Dillingham before any non-residents are allowed to come into Dillingham. We need to take care of the people within our region. Residents who are permanent residents of Dillingham or Aliknagik who are applying for a permit to come to Dillingham should also get approved to come home. We should not have to say that we're a fisherman or a subsistence user in order to get a permit. We need to also enforce that if you leave the district for 14 days. And the thing is we could put all these rules into place, but we're going to have a problem with enforcement. So we're going to have all these rules. Everybody's going to be running around looking at everybody. Everybody's going to be in a state of panic as we see these people come into town right now. So we're putting, by allowing people to come here is putting us all at risk. And we're going to have to make, we're going to have major problems between locals and non-locals this summer. I could already see it happening. Those of you who were here, go back to the summer of 1991, the year of the strike, when people fished and people were mad and fights broke out and things got vandalized. We're going to have some major problems. So when you guys make the decision tonight, please make your decision wisely. But one thing that should really be done is there should be absolutely no harbor access and allow for this to happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Gayla. Jennifer.
Good evening. Thank you. Can everybody hear me? All right. So I want to thank Norm and the city for all you guys are doing and the BB partnership. There's just a couple comments that I'd like to make. The first is the fishing district use is like Gayla and Jeannie were talking about. It's going to be really hard to mandate. So is there a way or maybe an idea of limiting the number of boats in the harbor at one time so you won't have this huge number of people that are going that could be on COVID? So I read the document where boats are tied up to each other. Well, if they're only coming in there for emergency use or they've got to get some stuff, they need oil, and then go back out, they can, at least with drift, they for sure can go out and lay anchor out in the bay. So that's one of my comments is that I think that maybe limiting over making this giant quarantine area where your infection rate is going to skyrocket because you have so many people in one area. The other one that was part of the discussion was the testing. The feasibility of testing right now is unknown, and to put it into an ordinance and put it in black and white is I just don't think it's a smart idea. Adding an amendment later when you know what is going to happen with testing, what the feasibility is for testing, I think that's where you should go with that one. Because if you say they have to be tested, they have to be tested before, they have to be tested after, Dillingham residents have to be tested, but they can't, and the hospitals can't, then I don't feel that you have a leg to stand on for your ordinance because you're already setting it up to fail. And the last comment is I feel like Section 18, Item D on page 12, where it talks about Dillingham residents, is kind of doesn't mesh with the memo that talks about the three-hour leave and quarantine requirements. If someone's done at the end of the year and their boat's here and they need to get their boat to their home because they don't park it into that resident area or the they're not in PAS, they're at home or somewhere else, they're going to have to stay 14 days. Then they have to get their boat taken out and then they have to go home. Well, you've just put this huge exposure thing compared to I'm done with the season. I've got a boat hauler. He's going to take me out, and I'm going to go home, and I'm going to quarantine there instead of in the harbor where I'm going to be more at risk. So I feel like those two, the memo and the ordinance, kind of clash together. But I want to thank you. I understand right now a lot of people don't want fishing. They don't want people to come in, but it looks like it is, and if it is, and there's no benefit for residents or non-residents to come because they have to financially take care of themselves, They have to pay boat payments. Some people, that's their livelihood. If there's no financial benefit and they're going to lose their house and their home, everything else, because they're expecting to have this money, we're going to have fishing because there's no financial way for them to support themselves. So again, thank you everybody for this.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'll call on the next person. I do want to make sure that people that are talking to us know that we're really quiet because we're all listening. We're all taking notes on the comments you're making. So, and this is, I always treat this as a time for you to speak to the council. This isn't the time for the council to argue or engage with citizens. This is the chance you get to tell us what you think. So the next person I'll call on is Dan Dunaway.
Thank you, Alice. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity. One of the things I heard, there's been some confusion about the status of the sport fishery as far as the state's concerned. And the governor has declared that sport fishing, personal use, subsistence is essential activity. And I'm not able to put my fingers on exactly where. I can't keep up with these mandates. At one time, it was in Mandate 12, Attachment 2B5, which mainly addressed guides. But we were reassured in the statewide sport fishing work group when we were developing templates for the lodge and sport fishing industry that from the commissioner multiple times that the governor's adamant that all fishing is viewed as a procurement of food and should be essential. And I just sent an email and I CC'd you seeking the commissioner to put that on the Fish and Game website where it's more easily accessible. Some of it is buried in the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association, KRSA, website. It has a lot of material that I can't even wade all the way through, but it gives templates to lodges, templates to guides, templates to charter operators to how to make a state-compliant business plan for the virus. But just to reassure you, and this is why I'm concerned about use of harbors and launches, that the state believes these are essential activities, and I even have found an old note where I wrote down, it says, small communities may not restrict this. Now, beyond that, I don't know what that exactly means, but access to the launches and being able to access fishing areas is the state views it as their purview. And so I think it could easily be accommodated, but I think it'd be awful burdensome to add a whole bunch of permits and other things. People go to Black Slough. Sometimes they do it overnight. Sometimes they come home and so on. And depending on weather, tides, and fish sought, people use all the different launch sites at some time during the year. So please keep those in mind. And you know, we're chewing on a big hunk of muktuk here. I would recommend that you don't act tonight. That take some time. Consider this. As I've sent some of the messages, contact Unalaska, Valdez, some of these other places, and find out what they're doing before we do something that then you got to backpedal and undo. We're not in the frantic panic emergency that I think the media has fanned the fires on. We are ahead of the game right now. And I think we can have a little bit of time to be thoughtful about this. So that's enough. Thank you very much for your attention and the hard work you're doing.
Thank you, Dan. So I'll call on Diane next. And just a note, we could hear Dan. His voice was clear, but I think he might have been a little close to his phone, and so we really had to strain to pick up the words, so maybe just keep that in mind. Don't get too far away from your phone when you're talking, but but don't get too close because we have to strain to understand it. So, Diane?
Hi, good evening. Can you hear me? Am I at the right distance to my phone?
Yeah, I think you're perfect, Diane.
All right. Okay, so first comment is about the memorandum and testing. Just the call-in show this past Wednesday, I'm pretty sure Dr. Heineman let us know that there are only 300 tests available in the Bristol Bay region. So the memorandum is unrealistic as right now I'm assuming those tests will only be given to people who are symptomatic. And right now, I don't think that our region has enough testing for, you know, just I want to go in and I need to get tested. I don't think that addition to the memorandum is realistic. I agree with it, but I don't think that is something that can happen here. Next, I want to address Section 18, Number D. You know, this as D reads, any Dillingham resident who has entered the fisheries-related use district shall quarantine within the fisheries-related use district. Now, many, many, many Dillinghamers have their boats at home. Many of the businesses that support our fishermen, our local fishermen, are located within the Boat Harbor District. You've got Napa, you've got Alaskanet, as well as if your boat is going into the boatyard to have work done on it, you know, right now this is saying our local people have got to sacrifice in order to go in to commercial fish. The people who are coming to Dillingham should be making the sacrifices, not the local residents. So this needs to be addressed, possibly issuing permits to our local people, our local fishermen, or even anybody in general who wants to go to Napa. Issue a local permit that allows a person to go in and use those facilities and leave again. You know, this is really, really discriminatory against our local fishermen. You know, people who are coming to our town are lucky. They are lucky that they're coming here and get to use our facilities. But making it mandatory for our local people to have to go into the fisheries district is not right. That needs to be rectified. You need to figure that out. If you need to pull your lines back and allow access to the harbor for launching and those businesses, then maybe that boatyard should be those small boatyards should be the district, and those people need to figure out how to get their parts from Napa and Alaskanet. Alaskanet can be accessed from inside of the boat harbor, the boatyard. All right, so I'll move on from that. The third thing is, on your website, your packet, the third page that shows where the fisheries district is located at, the third page is blank. Can you tell me where that third page is located at? It's actually page 18 of 71. Doesn't show anything on there. The next would be, you know, if adopted how it is right now, my husband goes out to go commercial fishing. He needs supplies. How will we get supplies if we're not allowed to go into the fishing district? How will we be able to get our local fishermen the supplies that they need while they're out on the water? What if they break down? How is that going to be addressed? As it appears, once a boat is launched, they have to stay within that fishing district. They're not allowed to go home. They're not allowed to, you know, go back and forth. I think that's it for my comments. Thank you for taking my comments. Thank you for working on this. I appreciate that you want to protect the residents of Dillingham, but let's remember that our residents should come first, and we should not be eliminated out of these districts right now. As it's looking, you're targeting the outside fishermen, and our local people should be targeted first. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Diane. So that was the last of that group. Are there other people that want to address the council? Tell me your names, and then I'll go back and call people one at a time.
Robert Tiano.
Tiano, I didn't hear the first name.
Richie.
It was Robert. Okay. Robert Tiano.
Oh, Robert. Okay. Is there anybody else who wants to address the council?
Alex,
Jimmy Hurley.
Or Jimmy Hurley. And there was somebody else there.
Todd Fritzy.
Todd Fritzy. Okay. Is there anybody else?
This is Patty Buholm.
Okay, let's go back to Robert. You wanted to address the council?
Yes, thank you, Madam Mayor. I think it's important we remember what's the purpose of all these mandates. And I'll just read a couple of portions from the state. The mandate is issued to protect the public of Alaskans. In order to ensure a safe, productive fishing season this year and still protecting Alaska communities to the maximum extent possible from the spread of virus. And I want to go back to Norm Van Vactor's comments. If you require testing and quarantine before they enter, that's the best method known today. And if anybody doubts that, you got to ask yourselves, why are the salmon processing companies, maybe not all of them, are requiring and doing that right now? Why are the big boat fleet in Seattle doing it as we speak? Mandatory quarantine and testing, not only once, but twice. So that's what we need to focus on. And if the city could do anything, and I'm referencing Todd's memo dated April 28th, Commercial Fishing 2020 memorandum, something like that needs to be implemented as soon as possible. You could put a May 16th date on it, and then review it then, and it's still valid, extend it. But that shuts the door. And then I want to go to the Emergency Ordinance 2020-07, Section 18, Quarantine Group. The way I read that in Section B, my boat is currently sitting across from the ice machine. I moved it out of Lummi's yard and on city property. If I read Section D, because I'm going into this fishing zone, I have to be requiring quarantine for 14 days. And you're making me do that as a Dillingham resident and an Alaskan, so you can allow people in who don't even live in Alaska or don't even live in Dillingham. So I don't think I'm asking for a privilege. I think I want to be treated like everybody else. The thing of it is, we had discussions about seeing about available property around the boat harbor that the city owns so locals could get their boat out of the PAF yard where they could work on them. And I thought the purpose of that is people who live here and not are required to do quarantine for 14 days have a safe environment to work on. And I don't know what happened to that. I know two other boats from where I'm at, but that really needs to be revisited. If you go into this fishing zones, you know, there's Napa, as a lady said, you know, and these other vendors, if you go in, you got to stay 14 days. Why am I required to stay 14 days? And I live here because I'm working on my boat. I don't think that's right. But the most important thing we could do today is require mandatory testing and quarantine before you come. There can't be any argument. And people say, if you say the testing's not there and this isn't there, how the heck does that fishing industry in the state of Washington get all the equipment and all the tests available? You'd be surprised how much of that will come available if you make it a requirement. Thank you.
Thanks, Robert. Jimmy Hurley?
Yes, hello there, Alice. Calling from Nequoc. I'm concerned about this virus. You know, I've spoken a few times, but, you know, to me, it's a coming. I mean, you know, you're bringing processes, fishermen from Washington, Oregon, and California. And the total number of deaths down there is 2,711 deaths total. And that's not the people. Them are people that are in the ground. Them are the people who, like, joined the people in 1918 in Bristol Bay. We had that before. They died. You can't say nothing about death, and it's elders that are really jeopardized here. So I'm just standing up for our elders. You know, we're not, you know, we don't know if this 2 weeks is even going to, quarantine is going to really, you know, be that effective. I mean, there's some other areas that are getting reaffected. So, you know, what the state is saying is one thing, but, you know, I know that, you know, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but, you know, it's you know, I fished Bristol Bay many years, and, you know, it's just so sad that money is good, all right. You know, Bristol Bay is number one, but, you know, at what cost? Some elder, with all these 10,000 people coming, somebody's going to come in with that virus. Believe me. I mean, they're coming from the hotspots. We have no deaths, nothing here. We have no virus. But after the season, thank them when they leave for the virus or whatever, if we have to bury any of our people, you know, because that's my concern. Thank you very much, Alice.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. Todd Fritzy. Oh, did Todd drop off? Okay, well, we'll come back.
Alice, can you hear me?
Oh.
Alice?
Yeah, Todd, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. I just had a few comments. I do have some concerns, like many others have expressed about the boat owners that have boats in their personal property around the community and how they're going to be expected to access the stores like Napa and the net shops and so on. That definitely concerns me. I like the idea of a zone for quarantine of the incoming fishermen from out of the area. But I have concerns of the size of it and the scope of it. I also, the idea of being regulated to dragnet doesn't, you know, to the ramp down there as a person who does all of his subsistence fishing across the Wood River, that doesn't bother me so much as when I want to go upriver and do the sport fishing, which, as Dan explained earlier, has been deemed an essential type of fishing by the state, along with subsistence. And I don't see subsistence addressed in the city's wording anywhere either. And I have concerns with that because you pull everybody across a Wood River into the Dillingham beaches and it's going to get ugly. It's tight and congested the way it is, and you know, there's 30, 40 skiffs that work over there, and I'll use the one individual that I traditionally have fished with over the years. Between the two of us, we're providing fish for a minimum of 9 households. And or you can just do some rough multiplication in your head and times that by, you know, say there's 30 skiffs that use that area. The other thing is if you're gonna go ahead with this and require us to use this area, some things need to happen down there, and the city needs to be really aware of it. Dragnet has always, or Icicle, has always had freezer vans sitting in the parking lot, and that parking lot is not included in the fishing zone, and so somebody would definitely need to keep an eye on that, because you're going to have us all there. You're going to need all the room you can get. The day the Kings hit out there, it's not uncommon to not be able to find a place to park. I have on occasions had to unhook my trailer from my truck and park them separately just so I could get out and out on the water. There's not a lot of room there. Some work would need to be done trying to make as much room there as possible. There's some derelict vehicles that need to be removed and so on. The other thing is the ramp itself is in horrible shape. It's got potholes in it. You can fall off of it. It's in many ways, it's dangerous. Not so much personally to a person, but it's dangerous for equipment, and it's going to take a toll on people's trailers and their skiffs. Oh, and there's things that could be done to shore it up and fix it up probably just for the summer until we can get through this. That would definitely, the city needs to take a good hard look at that. You know, in addition to cleaning the mud off, which is an annual event. Oh, I agree with Robert wholeheartedly on the testing issue. Testing needs to happen, and you got to figure out a way to make it happen. We're hearing there's not enough tests. We got to figure it out. Somebody's got to figure it out. And maybe you guys have got something there that I haven't heard. But those are my main concerns that I wanted to address with you. I appreciate you hearing, you know, and giving us the opportunity. I hope you'll proceed with caution tonight. And like Dan Dunaway said, you know, if you can't quite figure it out, don't rush to a decision. You guys got a day or two. I'm not saying a week or two. There's nothing that says you guys can't come back tomorrow night or 48 hours from now and say, okay, this is what we really think is going to work the best for the people of Dillingham. Because as has been stated many times, it's protecting us. It's to protect us. But this is our harbor. This is our river. This is our launches. It's not the people in Seattle. They don't pay our taxes. Oh, it really irritates me that we're apparently conceding a whole area of our community to them, and we can't even go buy oil at Napa to change the oil in our car, and neither can our mechanic, and you know, all of that. Because right now, as far as I know, Napa doesn't have a delivery service. The other thing is what are they going to house their workers down there all winter or all summer? Excuse me. All of their employees are local. Oh, just other things for thought. Thank you, and good luck with this. I definitely wouldn't want to be in your shoes tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd. Patty, you home?
thank you, Alice, and Council. I really have to echo the whole point about Dillingham seems like we're being forced into, we're the ones who have to be forced to stay home. Our way of life is being interrupted because the fishing is allowing to happen. I understand that's outside of your control at this point because the governor issued it. However, The citizens of Dillingham are being forced into what I see as like a herding immunity without our consent. And I really see this as a dangerous move because so many Alaska Natives and people of our community have a high, high amount of autoimmune, diabetes, different issues that put our population at a higher risk for contracting and actually perishing from the COVID-19. So I think a herding in our situation is not a good move. Also, too, I sent an email on 421. It had quite a few of suggestions for the city to consider. I realize you've been bombarded with emails and phone calls, and the EOC has been working frantically to issue travel permits and have not had the time maybe to look at that or some of the ideas that I proposed. One of them was, and this isn't going to be a favorable one, but I think it is one that has to be stated, is that I think the city should consider doing just an all-out curfew for the city of Dillingham. Then that way there is no question about who is traveling for what. And with the exception of subsistence living or critical movement, and that would be subsistence fishing, or if you are moving for a critical infrastructure at the time. Also, too, is that I realize that there is a flying the Lima and the All Clear flags. And it really says, it doesn't really indicate if it should be on land, but I really think that if you have boats who are either in yards or in Gusty's boat yard or the boat harbor, that those actually be flown, even if they are in dry dock. The other thing that I really wanted to address was the icicle or dragnet at the end of Wood River. That I don't foresee that being a possibility to launch from. And the only reason I say that is I really have to echo what Todd had said. There's not enough room. It's not safe. There's no parking. It is not an ideal place to launch any large skiff. And then also, too, if you're forcing people to use the boat launch at the end of Wood River for, especially for set netters, the possibility of them actually using Kanaknak Beach has to be addressed. Almost everybody in Dillingham uses Kanaknak Beach for subsistence use, and we already struggle enough as subsistence users to have our set net sites there for subsistence use. The lines are already run over. They've already parked 32-foot boats on people's sites, on their nets, and they're already running over lines and cutting them. So we think that that's not something that is a viable situation for this. And it's I don't foresee it being a positive move to use dragnet. If that does is something that you're going to use, then looking at Kanaknak Beach and setting up something so that no one park or launch or set there, or excuse me, launch from there, and just use that primarily for set netters, for in the sense of subsistence use. So thank you. Those are just some things to consider while you're debating tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Patty. Okay, that was the last person on that list. Is there anybody else that wanted to address the council? Did I hear? Yes.
Yeah, this is Tom. I'd like to be put on the list.
I heard Tom, is that right?
Tom Tilden, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
Is there anything else?
Yeah. Hi, this is Alana Hurley, please.
Alana, okay. Okay, is there anybody else?
Harold Cox, did you get me?
Harold, I have you now.
Okay.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, well, up to Tom.
Okay. Alice, thank you very much for allowing the public to participate in this meeting tonight. I'd also like to extend a thank you to Todd, who has religiously been on not only the local committee regarding the COVID-19, but also the regional and some of the state committees, and very, very vocal and very understanding, and working very hard with all the different groups, as well as probably a lot of you council members as well. So thank you all for your input and allowing us to provide input to what you see as solutions. I can't help but feel that, you know, I'm standing in the middle of a road and watching a 16-wheeler drive 100 miles an hour at me with no brakes, and at the steering wheel is Governor Dunleavy. And I say that because I feel very frustrated in reading the mandates and what we are trying to do, both as a tribal council as well as the city, in regards to coming up with restrictions, directions, and suggestions in regards to how to deal with this issue. Because he has been absent in regards to coming out and meeting with us, or meeting with anybody from Bristol Bay, even though we have suggested that we would send a team down to meet with him, that he has refused to do that. He has not allowed us to be part of the committee in regards to suggesting some of the mandates. And so we have no input. And I think that's really disgusting. But at the same time, he's going to allow 16,000 people to come into our area to commercial fish, sport fish, from some of the hot areas in the state. I noticed that in your ordinance under 33, you mentioned that California had 43,691, and I just checked, and that number from 43 has jumped to 48,917, so definitely around 49,000 from California, and they have had 1,982 deaths since then. So in looking at just the California, you can see that the numbers are steadily increasing yet. And so definitely the folks that are going to be coming in, some of them are probably clean right now and are, however, you know, still able to carry that virus. In Washington, it's a little bit more different, and you had 13,663 in your memorandum here, and right now today they have 14,327 and 814 deaths. And Oregon has climbed just a little bit. Oregon has been really slow, and I'm not too sure what they're doing down there, but whatever they're doing, the rest of the state has to follow. I think you had 2311, and now today it's 2510 and 103 deaths. So the fishermen that are coming in are definitely coming from areas that where the numbers are still climbing in regards to the number of the cases as well as the number of deaths. And that has been a steady trend since I've been monitoring this for the last 2 weeks. And so anything and everything that we can do definitely to protect ourselves is of the most importance. And I would also like to follow what Robert was talking in regards to testing and mandatory quarantine. I believe in addition to testing and mandatory quarantine, along with that comes enforcement. Without enforcement, we have nothing but something written on a piece of paper. I really believe that the villages that are here, our village as well, needs to sit down and, as a committee, of all of us working together to come up with some sort of enforcement deal to ensure that regardless of what laws we write or what ordinances we pass or what resolutions we pass, that they are enforceable. And without enforcement, we have nothing, because this thing could get out of hand. And I was able to sit down and talk with your police chief a little bit, and he really liked the idea of us all three different organizations, the Village of Meacock, Dillingham, and possibly a Lignity, all get together and talk about enforcement. You know, how can we contribute? Our village has asked and sent a letter in regards to a federal marshal, and we are still trying to find out exactly what the federal marshal would be capable of doing. We have followed the lead in regards to the village of South Nakni, King Salmon, and Naknek that have requested one. And so we're still on wait in regards to what will happen there. But at some point in time, we hope that we're able to assist the city in enforcing its ordinances in regards to making sure that the laws are followed, both in regards to testing and mandatory quarantine. I think Todd pointed out something very important, is that, you know, that what we passed tonight, we could always amend tomorrow. We are in an emergency situation. Time is slipping by, and we are probably going to have to meet again and discuss more issues. When I look at the town of Cordova, Sitka, Falls Pass, and Whittier, in Whittier, they have had a shrimp fishery that took place. They had the same concerns that we had. People were going there to take off and go into the shrimp fishery, and they were very successful. It's time now for us to go and sit down and ask them, hey, what did you find successful? What did you find bad? Let's learn from people that are already are going through this. Sitka's going to be going through this with the herring fishery. Cordova will be going through with their early king fishery. And Falls Pass, of course, with their fishery. And so we have to look at some of the problems that they encountered, what was wrong with some of the ordinances that they have, and let's not make the same mistakes. Let's learn from them and find out what worked and what we can do, can't do. But I think, you know, I really feel desperate at times as an individual here looking at both the federal, the state, and the local governments in regards to what we can do, can't do. And yesterday, I sat down and I read about this new drug, remdesivir, and it was all exciting. And, of course, it's not through its testing stages yet. I was also encouraged by the fact that I read about the Oxford University and their ability to have created a vaccine for another coronavirus, not COVID-19, however, but they're way ahead of, I think, all the other ball players and are going through their final stages. And I immediately got on the phone and called Dr. Hyman, you know, and to say, you know, they're almost done with their stages. Maybe they're looking for folks to try their virus in the future on, and they're looking for 6,000 people. You know, maybe they should come on out here and give us all a shot of vaccine. But, you know, maybe that's grasping for straws. But at the same time, I can't help but keep watching this 16-wheeler coming at me with no brakes. And, yes, I am going to be reaching for straws, and I am going to be continue to look for answers and solutions. But the final remarks I do want to say is that our tribal council did pass our resolution. You should be receiving a copy of that if you haven't already. And basically, there was only three things that we were very concerned about. Of course, we went with the extension. We will go along with your extension date to coordinate with it. But we put an expiration date up until June 1 on our particular one. We asked that masks be mandatory worn in town. And then we talked about the local people from Clark's and Manicotic and Alignagic and up the river villages that come and buy supplies. But I think that you, when I talked to you about that, you thought you had a solution to that. But I think that we should be slamming the doors on some of the local folks' faces, but actually encourage them to continue to utilize our commerce services and health services that we have here in Dillingham, since we are the hub of Bristol Bay. But thank you again, Madam Mayor, for allowing us all to speak and provide input and all the hard work that you're all putting into dealing with this emergency that we have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tommy. Alana?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for the opportunity to provide input tonight. I'll try to be brief. I guess I really appreciate the good discussion regarding the fishing districts. I want to say that I'm all for confining people into zones, because I think the last thing we need is people having free-for-all access to our entire community. And I think, you know, if there's anything we have a little time on, it might be that issue. And I'd throw out there, because I think, you know, I really agree with everybody that we've got to do what we have to do to ensure that we're putting our residents first, but keeping people safe at the same time. And I'd, you know, throw out there possibly carving out just portions of the harbor for the zone, or keeping it just a PAF. I think there's, you know, some creative things that could be done there. And I guess, you know, what I really want to share is I'm just deeply troubled to hear people say that requiring testing up front is unreasonable. What's truly unreasonable is the reality, to, you know, echo Tommy's comments, is that our communities are being forced by the state to deal with an influx of people from all over the world, many coming from, you know, COVID hotspots, and they're forcing us to do so without any adequate protective measures. That's what's truly unreasonable. The medical community is saying the only way we can safely open up communities is to have adequate testing and protective measures. And setting the bar where it needs to be in terms of requiring testing before coming into our communities, that's what needs to happen. And setting that requirement is true leadership. Waiting to see if testing is possible is not the route we should be taking. If we require it, then we make it happen. We work together to make it happen. The best thing we can do to protect our people is not waver on requiring testing. You know, the rest of this planning is really important, but if we can't get ahead of this through actual and real prevention, we're just going to be putting out giant fires that are going to be costing people lives, when we could have been preventing this if we held the line on testing. I plead with you, we need action now at a minimum on testing. Time is not on our side. We don't have the luxury of waiting when it comes to testing. If it's going to happen this season, we need to start requiring that immunity now. People are already coming in every day. we cannot falter on requiring that. And I'm so thankful that it's in this draft ordinance and resolution for the city to consider. And I want to say thank you to you all for taking this up. You know, the reality is the state is failing us. And it's on your shoulders now as our last line of defense. So please be the leaders we need. Do the right thing. Please act on requiring testing up front tonight. We do not have time to wait. And every single medical recommendation is serial testing is the only way we can really attempt to protect our people. It must be mandatory, and it's our only real hope to minimize an outbreak in Bristol Bay. So I plead with you to please be the leaders we need and put forth mandatory testing requirements for anyone coming into our region. Thank you.
Thank you, Alana. Harold?
Yeah, can you hear me okay, Alice?
Yeah, you good.
Okay, just a couple of things I wanted to touch on tonight. One was the Wood River launch down here at Wood River. I heard several comments on about launching boats down at Wood River, about icicles, vans, and all being parked down there. And I'm sure the city realizes that that property is icicles property. I think the city has, I don't know if you guys leased the road and the launch, or how much property the city has access to down there. But the icicle actually owns the land. So I think you guys need to check in on that and see how much the city actually has down there. And another thing was, yeah, that was the icicle deal. But another, the only other thing I'm really concerned about, and well, hopefully, I'm still hoping a fishing don't happen, but we're not set up to handle any of this. If something happens in this town, our hospital cannot take care of it, period. They can barely take care of who's here now. And so if they want to come in and start this stuff, then the state needs to get equipment in here, needs to set the hospital up, get ventilators, get testing, the whole nine yards before they even consider coming in here. And that's about the only couple of things I wanted to say, but I appreciate you letting me make my comments.
Thank you, Harold. I would just say one thing, Harold. The city bought the boat launch from Dragnet way back years ago. I was on the council then, so we actually own the boat launch.
Okay, the launch itself, what's property down there around the launch?
Yeah, that I don't know for sure. Okay,
see what
is there
I mean?
Anybody
I mean,
else?
You're not going to have any staging down there if you don't. I know you got the launch, but then you've got the property down there where if people launching their boats, like Todd was talking about, for going sport fishing on and leaving their rigs down there, I don't know if we got the right to even do that if the city doesn't own the portion down there for its bargain.
Okay. Thank you, Harold.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anybody? Yeah, thank you. Is there anybody else that wanted to address the council?
Yeah, Mark Cardi.
Okay, Mark, anybody else? Okay, after anybody else wants to address, maybe get on the list now, because I think after Mark is done, I probably will close the workshop and we'll move on to the meeting. So anybody else wanted to address the council? Okay, I'm sorry, did I step on someone? Okay, Mark, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you for giving me the time to toss in my two cents here. And I'll start with it, that the only way to prevent the introduction of this virus, SARS-CoV-2, into this community is complete isolation. And unfortunately, that probably will not happen. And so I have a question for the council and others involved with deciding these matters, is that when a person comes in to this community of Dillingham and Alekenegik and the surrounding villages that has this virus, they've been tested and they get a negative test result, so it shows that they don't have it. But they are, in fact, infected, and they begin to spread it throughout the community. Is the city of Dillingham going to be liable for, you know, these newly infected persons' expenses, and how will that be handled when a scenario like that would unfold? And that's all I just wanted to ask.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Council, I think I'll close the workshop and we can move on to our council meeting. I appreciate that everybody has been involved. I just noticed the time, thinking people are probably starting to get a little bit tired. If you don't mind, if everybody would just stay online and council would take like a minute and a half. Some of us might need to get up and move away from our desks for a minute. So don't hang up, just take about a minute and a half break.